So this is my disclosure. And Portola has a drug, dual SYK and JAK inhibitor, which I will mention during my talk. So first of all, this is a very familiar drug, you know, by now. And ibrutinib is a BTK inhibitor. And it potently inhibits BTK at IC50 of 0.5 nanomolar. So it's orally available. And this is the initial data presented at ASH by Youngberger. And then after 2 months treatment, the tumor melted away. So there's many clinical trials in a number of indications, CLL, mantle cell lymphoma, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, and Waldenstrom. So these clinical trials led to accelerated FDA approval of 5 indications by now, and through 2016 and up until March of this year. So the most remarkable is, you know, for CLL, now it's moved to frontline therapy, and this is ibrutinib represent the first non-chemo containing regimen for CLL treatment. So, you know, I did a check at clinicaltrials.gov, you know, as of September 2016. Right now, there's 184 active clinical studies, more than 100 in lymphoma, and more than 15 in CLL. So this is many of these are also involve combination therapies. However, the annual cost of treatment is quite high. It's it costs 1 year treatment costs $130K. And this price tag really make it one of the most costly new cancer drugs in recent years. So, you know, these days we're talking about the precision medicine. You know, this from an economic point of view is also very important to understand and to consider who should be treated by this drug and who should not be treated by this drug. So Dr. Brown gave a very nice introduction regarding B-cell receptor pathway in CLL. So BTK, this is another representation of a B-cell receptor pathway, but BTK is situated right under B-cell receptor after activation of Lin and SYK, and SYK phosphorylates BTK. So, as you know, I mentioned earlier, I'm going to focus my talk on drug resistance. So it's very important to understand what is called the concepts, what is primary resistance and what is secondary. So the primary resistance is a patient demonstrate lack of response at the initiation of therapy. The secondary resistant is characterized by initial response that is followed by loss of that response. So I'm going to talk about the secondary ibrutinib resistance in CLL first. So this is a 3-year follow-up study in treatment-naive and previously treated patients of ibrutinib trial. And this was published by John Bird in Blood. So you can see the partial response is great, is remarkable. However, you know, the complete response, complete remission is still very low, you know, is hovering about 10%. So there is a number of other studies have published recently. And then, you know, despite this response, 25% of patients treated with ibrutinib had to discontinue. The main reason for discontinuation is a toxicity and the intolerance. And then, but however, up to 40% of these patients discontinue due to disease progression. So 25% of 40%, that makes the overall 10% of ibrutinib-treated patients will progress. And then when patients discontinue ibrutinib, 75% of them die within about 3 months. So the outcome is very poor. So I want to give you a case, vignette, and that illustrates the discovery of ibrutinib resistance. So this is the work my lab did together with Dr. Furman when I was at Cornell. So now I'm at University of Chicago. So we have a 61-year-old woman who was first diagnosed diagnosed with a CLL in 2000. So about 10 years later, you know, after many failing many other treatment regimens, she was enrolled in the ibrutinib trial, phase 1b at Cornell. And so she demonstrated initial response, and then 19 months later, and her absolute lymphocyte count and the lymphadenopathy returned. And then, so she was treated by ibrutinib in May. Her dose was increased from 540 to 840, but then she demonstrated continued disease progression. So so we are doing these paraclinical study with Dr. Furman. And so for this patient, this is a ibrutinib initiation. This is the absolute lymphocyte count reflecting the disease burden. So we collected pre-responding, and we collected two specimens during the relapse phase. So we subject these samples by next-gen sequencing analysis, so the pre-treatment, responding, relapse one, relapse two. If you compare these, and these T, this is in the BTK enzyme, this T has the in orange has been changed to an A, and then the amino acid has been changed from cysteine to serine. And this is confirmed by a traditional, conventional Sanger sequencing method. So what's the consequence of this mutation? Basically, the drug, ibrutinib, binds to BTK enzyme in the in green through a covalent bond. And this, you know, the yellow part is the cysteine residue, and then this magenta blue is ibrutinib. So after the mutation, this link is disrupted. So the drug does indeed bind to the enzyme. It can still get into the pocket of the enzyme. However, the binding affinity is weakened by this mutation by 500-fold. So the drug is really the mutation. What it does is to weaken the binding between the enzyme and the drug. So most recently, and we discovered another BTK mutation, and this is very different from the C481 residue. So this is, you know, by next-gen sequencing, and just like a T has been changed to a C, and this is a Sanger sequencing, T to C change. But then when we look at the amino acid, this is at 316. And where is the 316 located? So this is the BTK enzyme. The traditional C81 is there. And then it's located in the kinase domain, depicted by in green color. And this is directly affects drug binding to the enzyme. However, this new mutation, which is a T316, is a SH2 domain mutation. So it's depicted by this magenta color domain. And then the mutation is right here. It does not directly affect the drug binding. So we are pretty puzzled by the structural explanation why this mutation will confer resistance. We still don't have a structural explanation. However, we did some functional analysis. And so this is, you know, showing you the wild-type enzyme. And this reflects a proliferating CLL. And then for the wild-type enzyme, and the ibrutinib inhibit CLL proliferation. But then for the T316A mutation, this inhibition is lost. And in the bottom, we compare the C41S mutation with the T316 mutation. They behave similarly. This is a wild-type. You can compare the space between the red peak and the green peak. This is a ibrutinib inhibition, but then this is lost in the by the mutation C481, and this is also T316 mutation behaved similarly to 481 mutation. So this got recently published in OncoTarget. So I did like a literature review for you regarding, you know, the frequency of this mutation in ibrutinib-resistant patient. So this is a summarize of 4 studies, you know, by Bird and by Cassie Wu and Adrian Wisner as an AACR abstract, and also by our own study. So right now, there's a total of 47 patients reported in the literature. In reality, in real world, there are many more. And so of these 47, 29 has a CLL, 18 developed Richter transformation. So out of this 29 CLL progressed the patients, and 20 of them had the BTK mutation, that represent about 69-70%. So PLC gamma 2 is also seen, but so far in the literature, there are 4 patients have a PLC gamma 2 mutation whose CLL progressed, and this represent about 14%. So many resistant cases, still up to 17%, have neither mutations. And also, if you look at the patients with Richter, and about 2/3 of them do not have a BTK, have neither BTK or PLC gamma 2. So, so at the University of Chicago, we're using these clinical grade OncoPLUS panel, and of with 1,200 gene, and then so we sequence. We're sequencing patients with ibrutinib resistance. So BTK is here, PLC gamma 2 is there. So. So we covered secondary resistance, and now I'm coming back to the primary ibrutinib resistance in CLL. So there's much less literature on this topic, but then there's many indication from the clinical observation and suggest that there are some factors may play a role. And so, first of all, so patients' overall response to ibrutinib, although it's it's a 70%, and then there are 20% of patients have a partial response with a peripheral lymphocytosis. So overall, 90% of patients respond. But however, patients with unmutated IGHV displayed a significantly higher rate of overall response, 77% versus those with a mutated IGHV, 77% versus 33% in the initial New England Journal published by John Byrne. And in these patients treated with ibrutinib, and if you compare patients' outcome by progression-free survival and overall survival, so the gap between unmutated and mutated subgroups have diminished. So Jennifer mentioned in her talk, unmutated, are doing poorly, by survival, and then they even after chemotherapy treatment, unmutated is still doing much poorly. But now the gap diminished, and saying mutated and unmutated are probably, doing similarly. So that's largely due to because the unmutated group perhaps respond better to ibrutinib treatment. So after 3 years of treatment, in that paper I mentioned, and in a supplemental supplemental data, and Dr. Byrne presented that in treatment naive patients, unmutated CLL had 40% of a complete remission compared to 6% of those patients with mutated CLL. So the quality of response is better and favoring unmutated CLL. So from these clinical observations, we are prompt to do this study to shed some light on the biology of this differential response between unmutated and the mutated CLL. And we recently published this in OncoTarget. So basically, what I want to show you here is the red dot represents unmutated CLL. You can see they separate from these mutated CLL that's plotted towards the bottom. So basically, what this plot shows is that unmutated CLL has much higher level of forceful BTK, and they also correlate with the higher proliferation we measure with our ex vivo CLL model. And this higher baseline proliferation make unmutated CLL respond to ibrutinib in a much steeper, with a much steeper kinetics. Can you help me advance? Okay, so we covered secondary resistance and the primary resistance. And now, we have these ibrutinib resistance, what do we do about it? So I am going to present you with some laboratory studies first. So basically, alternative therapy can be classified, I can put them into four different classes. So first of all, other BTK inhibitors, acala, brutinib, and so forth and so on. And then inhibitors, the other class is inhibitors targeting other BCR kinases, such as dasatinib and sertralinib. And inhibitors targeting other oncogenic pathways, such as adalimumab, duvelisib, and venetoclax. Again, still there are inhibitors targeting other cellular processes, such as selinexor, target the nuclear export process. So basically, we in the lab created a personalized CLL therapeutic model to test like a particular patient's CLL cells against different drugs. This is a proliferation readout. So these cells are from an ibrutinib-resistant patient. So you can see here, you know, these are control, and this is an ibrutinib resistance. You see cells, you know, with a high BRDU incorporation. That means that these cells are highly proliferated. So if, you know, compare this ibrutinib with other drugs, so this is shown here, this is dasatinib, and this is a dual SYK and JAK inhibitor from Portola, and this is a SYK inhibitor, and this is a JAK inhibitor. So basically, they're quantified here. So, you know, basically, the bottom line of this ibrutinib resistant cells can respond to other kinase inhibitors. Can you help me advance, please? I think this is running out of battery. Okay, so, you know, shown on this slide, this is the same ibrutinib-resistant patient cells when we tested against idelalisib. Idelalisib, you know, in patient, can 5 micromolar of idelalisib can be achieved in patient. So we did a dose titration. So here you can see a nice dose-responsive curve. So at a clinical achievable concentration of 5 micromolar, this proliferation is reduced from 100% to 2%. Advance, please. And so you compare the boxes, dramatic difference. Next one. So in this slide, I illustrate ibrutinib-resistant CLL cells may remain sensitive to venetoclax. So here, this is, again, another patient with ibrutinib resistance. So this is no drug treatment, ibrutinib resistant. You know, it's really the cell viability is not touched by ibrutinib. These are the concentration we chose, are all clinically achievable concentration. We don't go much higher. So although the concentration shown here are different, but then that's the clinical achievable concentration for each individual drug. Here I show a dose response to venetoclax, 100 nanomolar. You know, this proliferation is really reduced by at least a fivefold. So those were laboratory experiences, under laboratory experimental conditions. And this is the real world experience and just published recently. And the proven our laboratory model is really valuable. So the real world experience is a multi-center study and published recently in Blood. And so, okay. So so here, the patient who failed the first kinase inhibitor, either ibrutinib or idelalisib, was treated with an alternative KI. So the sequence is either ibrutinib, relapse or discontinuation and treated by another alternative KI. So so this, because there's no established therapy in this group of patients who discontinue ibrutinib or idelalisib, so so these group of investigators summarize the real-world experience. So these patients are normally treated with an alternative kinase inhibitor, and then many of them are treated with a BCL-2 inhibitor as well. So these represent about more than 50% of treatment choice. by the treating physicians. So, so overall response by alternative AKI in this sequence, it was achieved at 50%. And that the top reason for discontinuation, as I mentioned earlier, it was a toxicity and the intolerance. And then when they compared kinase inhibitor with a BCL2 inhibitor, such as a venetoclax, they observed a significant clinical activity for subsequent BCL2 treatment. Overall response rate, 76% versus 50%. That reached statistical significance. And then I mentioned, most of the patients discontinued, it was due to intolerance. And in this group of patients, and when you use alternative kinase inhibitor, it seemed to be very effective. However, if a patient discontinued due to CLL progression, and the alternative kinase inhibitor generated less durable response by progression measured by progression-free survival. So this group of authors suggest that the progressed patient should be treated with a non-BCR-based therapies. So to summarize, and we talked about secondary resistance, the BTK mutations, and also the new SH2 domain mutation. If people remember the CML story, and that was, so patients with BCR-ABL, and then they develop resistance in ABL kinase and confers resistance to imatinib. This story is very similar to ABL kinase mutation. So the kinase domain mutation was discovered first, followed by mutation in other domains. So now we start seeing BTK mutation in other domains, although 481 is still a hotspot for mutation. So PCL gamma 2 mutations are also seen. And we talked about the primary sensitivity resistance. So not by, so studies out of Ohio group also has shown deletion 17P confirms unfavorable outcome in patients treated with ibrutinib. And also a study from MD Anderson showing complex cytogenetic confers unfavorable outcome for ibrutinib treated patients. So alternative therapy, these are, there's no established treatment option, but then people have been using alternative kinase and also BCL2 inhibitors, and other kinase may work as well. So I'll stop here, and this is, the team I have assembled, except Dr. Kumar. We, who is our chair, we invited him to our party, but then he's really supported us to do all this study. So I have a genomic lab, clinical genomic lab at University of Chicago. We do offer clinical grade BTK and the PLC gamma 2 determination. We are also trying to develop a sensitive way to detect the emerging mutations. We are trying to catch those mutations before patients develop a clinical relapse. So I'll stop here.